Hello and welcome to the session on model-based security with UMLSEC. I am Jan Jurjens from Munich University of Technology in Germany, and I will give this presentation. Firstly, I would like to thank the organizers for giving me the opportunity to give this presentation here at this conference. So what is the problem that this session will be concerned with? The general situation is, as you probably know, that society and economies increasingly rely on computer networks for their infrastructure to work. And this is increasingly concerning all kinds of aspects of modern society, including communication, finance, energy distribution, transportation, and so on. This means that these networks, which are used to provide all these facilities, are increasingly vulnerable to attack. And this is especially the case because the networks that are used to connect all these facilities are usually open to users who may not be intended to make use of them, such as the internet, which was originally designed not to be used by all kinds of people and not to be used by critical services either. And that's the reason why today's internet is, at a start, not secure and cannot be trusted to be secure against possible attackers. And specifically, one of the problems also is that these systems, which are networked on a global scale, can thus be attacked anonymously and from a safe distance, even from another country, where you would not have access to legal means to dealing with the problems of people trying to attack a system. And therefore, we have to rely on technological grounds to make the network secure against attackers. And this is what this talk will be about. So what is the problem with security? We have noticed, and you may have actually also seen news and the media, that many systems that are used in practice and which are supposed to be secure are actually not secure, and in fact there are many problems which are found in practice, sometimes years after the systems have actually been used in practice. And the reason for that is, firstly, that to design secure systems correctly, such that they are actually resilient against attacks, is inherently difficult, because the requirements that have to be considered there are always concerned with possible attackers that may try to interfere with the system intentionally. And this makes it rather difficult to predict how a system will actually react while in practice being employed and while possibly being attacked by untrusted users. And the problem also is that designers in practice often don't have a very strong education in security. And also in practical implementation of systems, security is often only considered with retrospective. So meaning that in practice often systems are firstly designed and only afterwards people start to worry about security aspects. And lastly, the problem is that you cannot just use security mechanisms blindly in a way that you could, for example, just buy some security technology such as a firewall and somehow put it into your system and hope that the result will be secure. The problem with that is that many attacks consider the points between your system and the security mechanisms that you use to make the system secure. And so these points have to be addressed and worried about, and therefore it's not sufficient just to buy something and use it out of the box and hope that the overall system will then be secure. But instead, development has to take care about security aspects. So, yeah, what is the approach that has been taken so far in practice? This is the so-called penetrate and patch approach, where you firstly develop your system and you put it into practical use, and if the system gets penetrated, maybe by hackers, then you try to find out where the problem lies, and you come up with a code patch, which you distribute to your customers so that the system can be fixed. But obviously this approach has disadvantages. Firstly, it is inherently insecure, because by the time when you realize that there is a problem with your system, this flaw may already have been exploited by attackers. And secondly, the approach is disruptive, because your customers will keep on applying patches to the software. And this firstly makes things costly, because you have to distribute them, and also it decreases customer confidence in your system. To deal with this problem, there has been actually a traditional approach from computer science research under the name of formal methods. But the problem is that these mathematically or logical based methods to designing systems are often found to be expensive when put to use in practice. And the reason for that is that often you have to train people specifically to use these kind of methods. And also it is usually the case that when you want to make use of these methods, you have to construct formal specifications which you then have to analyze. And this may also be costly in practice. So compared to that, the goal of the approach that I'm presenting here has the aim to incorporate security aspects from the start of the system design. So the goal is to consider security from early stages of the system development and within the system development context. And it's also important to take an expansive view on security in system development, because, of course, attackers may try to attack any part of the system. So it's important to have a consistent view on the overall system to avoid having gaps in your view of the system which may allow attackers to attack the system. And the idea how to achieve all this is to firstly design your system using models in the unified modeling language, and then to analyze these models for flaws that may already be contained on the design layer. And the second part of this approach is that you can then use the models to generate test sequences to make sure that also your implementation is secure. So what is the motivation for using UML in this approach? Firstly, the unified modeling language offers a rather unprecedented opportunity to develop critical systems which have a high quality and while at the same time staying feasible in terms of development costs. And the reason why the UML is new in this respect is that firstly, it has become the de facto standard in industrial modeling of systems. And this means that many developers are already trained in using UML And these numbers of developers are increasing continually because UML is also taught a widespread way at universities. And so you can rely on future generations of developers being increasingly able to use the UML. And also compared with previous notations with a comparable user community, the UML is relatively precisely defined in the official specification document. And lastly, there are already many tools which are developed for using UML in the development context. So the part of UML that I will concentrate on in this approach consists of the following diagrams. These are the activity diagram, the class diagram, sequence diagram, state chart diagram, deployment diagram, and lastly the packages which you can use to model and group together different views on the system. And also an important aspect of the unified modeling language, which I will use here in this talk, is that you can extend the notation by standard extension mechanisms. And these are the so-called stereotypes, tags, and constraints. And I will say more specifically something about how to use these mechanisms in our approach. So what are these extension mechanisms? Firstly, you can use stereotypes to label model elements in your UML specification. And the idea is that the model elements labeled with stereotypes have then a more specific meaning. And secondly, you can also use tagged values to attach specific values to the stereotyped elements. Then lastly, you can define constraints which are associated with stereotypes and which give an additional meaning to the model elements that are attached to with stereotypes. And all of these informations defining these extension mechanisms can then be gathered together in a so-called profile, which then defines an extension of the UML for a specific application domain. And in this talk, I will focus on the profile for UMLSec, which is an extension of the UML for secure systems development. So what is the goal of defining this extension? Firstly, the idea is that you draw your UML models and you then evaluate the UML models for vulnerabilities on the design level. And this way you can make use of established security engineering knowledge and encapsulate it within your UML model. So this means that even developers who don't have a lot of training in security can make use of this expert engineering knowledge by using these UML patterns in their UML model. And also, as I mentioned already, this allows you to consider security from early on in your system development, which reduces costs which may otherwise arise if you only consider security late in your development context, because then you may have to make changes at later stages in order to correct flaws with respect to security. And lastly, if you're concerned with having your system certified for an official security level, then in many cases you are also required to submit documentation for the system. And if you use this approach, you already have the documentation in the form of the UML models, which also allows you to keep the costs of these kinds of certifications relatively low, because you can reuse this information. So I will now explain the UMLSec profile in more detail. Firstly, a few words about how these goals should be achieved. Firstly, there are several recurring security requirements which appear often in secure systems development and which can then be encapsulated in stereotypes because they have a specific meaning which can be made more precise in the context of UML models and which therefore is included in your UML model when you attach the stereotypes. And these include the properties of secrecy and integrity, which I will explain in more detail in a later slide. You can then use these constraints which are associated with the stereotypes to evaluate the UML models with the included security requirements using mechanized tool support to detect vulnerabilities on this design level. And so doing that, you can firstly ensure that the security requirements on the technical level, which you included in the UML specification, actually satisfy the overall security policy on your system by the company context. And you can secondly make sure that the specification and then later also the code which is written for the system actually provides the specification requirements on security which are included in the UML model. So the two kinds of security requirements that I will focus on in this talk are firstly secrecy, meaning that information which is supposed to be kept secret is not supposed to be let out to parties which are not authorized to get known to this information. Then the second main security requirement considered here is that of integrity. And in that situation, conversely, there's information which should not be, where it should not be possible for untrusted outside parties to modify this information without being authorized to do so. So now I will start explaining the stereotypes contained in the UML Sec profile. Firstly, we have several stereotypes considering the physical layer of the system. And these stereotypes can be attached within deployment diagrams to communication links and to system nodes. So for example, we have the stereotype internet, and this stereotype is supposed to be attached to communication links in your diagram, which are supposed to model internet links within your later implemented system. Then the way this is information is being used within this approach is that you have predefined threat sets which associate a certain adversary model and a given link stereotype with certain actions that this kind of adversary is supposed to be able to do to the communication which is taking place over this communication link. So in the example of the internet stereotype, it is the case that, for example, the default adversary can assume to be able to delete information that is exchanged over this communication link, and also to read the information that is passed on the link, and even be able to insert new information on this communication link, as this is explained in the table on the right bottom side of the slide. Compared to that, the stereotype encrypted, which is supposed to model an encrypted internet link, such as a virtual private network link. In that case, the default adversary is not assumed to be able to read or insert information on that link, but may only be able to delete information by applying brute force attacks, such as bringing down a network server on the network link. And there are other stereotypes, such as local area network and smart card, where a default adversary is assumed not to be able to attack these mechanisms. But also you could have different kinds of adversaries beyond the default adversary, such as an insider adversary, who would then be able, for example, to attack local area networks, communication links. And this kind of information, which as a modeler you include by simply including these stereotypes, such as internet, local area network, and so on. And so the associated information explained on this slide is then in the associated tool support included automatically to analyze the model for security vulnerabilities. So starting now with the stereotypes which you would include in the UML models to specify security requirements on your system. The first example that I will consider here is that of fake change. So this is a security requirement which should ensure that within the transaction that it applies to, whenever you have a customer buying some goods from a business, then it should be the case that after the customer pays for the good, then eventually the good will be delivered to the customer. Or maybe if the good is not delivered, then at least the customer can get his money paid back. So the formal constraint with this stereotype, which you can firstly attach to use case diagram, is that there should be an associated activity diagram which explains your business process in more detail. And such an activity diagram we will see on the following slide. But firstly, this slide explains this fake change condition in more detail. Firstly, there is a constraint associated with it, as I already explained in the previous slide. And this is here made a bit more precise by saying that you have tags associated with this fake change stereotype. Firstly, the buy tag, which has as a value a state within your activity diagram. And secondly, you have a sell tag, which has another state associated with it. And the idea is that whenever a state included in the buy tag is reached, then afterwards, eventually, a sell state has to be reached. And in the example, to continue the example which we saw on the previous slide, now we have this activity diagram which specifies the business process in more detail involved in this purchase. So there you again have a customer and a business, and the situation is that the customer starts by requesting some good from the business and by paying for the good, and then the control flow splits. On the one hand, the business may eventually deliver the good, or otherwise the customer waits until the delivery should be due on a certain date, and if that is not the case, then the customer is able to reclaim the money from the business. And so we see in the tags associated with the stereotype fake exchange that firstly we have the buy state, which is the activity pay, and then later a sell state, which is firstly either the activity reclaim or the activity deliver. And so this constraint associated with fair exchange now ensures that after the customer pays for the good, eventually he will either be delivered the good or be able to reclaim the money, as was required, as I stated earlier, that this is the requirement associated with this fake exchange constraint. So, and using this kind of stereotype and using this model-based approach to security, you can actually verify mechanically using a tool connected to your UML case tool that on the level of this business process modeling, your security requirement is actually fulfilled. So now we have another kind of stereotype which you can use to include a security requirement within your UML model. This is the so-called secure links stereotype, and this you can use to make sure that the level of physical security which is supposed to be provided by the physical layer of your system is actually sufficient to meet the security requirements on the logical level of your system, on the communication, for example. So you have a constraint again connected with this stereotype, and here this requires that for each dependency in your class diagram, which could be either a call dependency or a send dependency, and both of which signify communication between different parts in your system, then this dependency can be marked with two kinds of stereotypes. Firstly, secrecy, and secondly, integrity. And then intuitively, the communication that happens along this dependency should satisfy these security requirements. And if you use then the secure links stereotype, which ensures that this security requirement is actually provided on the physical level, then this is provided by the tool associated with this approach by ensuring two constraints on the technical level, namely firstly that in the case of a secrecy stereotype, that in the threats set which I mentioned earlier, for a given adversary type A, the read action is not included in the threats that are possible against a given stereotype which is associated with your dependency. And similarly, for the integrity requirement, it should not be the case that the insert action is included in the threats set associated with this dependency. So to explain this as an example again, if you have the situation of a system consisting of two components, firstly the client machine and secondly the server machine, which are connected by an internet communication link, and where the communication between the two components is supposed to satisfy secrecy, then if you consider the example given on the slide, the secure links requirement in this example is actually violated, because you have this communication link marked secrecy, which goes along an internet link. And if you, for example, now take the default adversary type, then as I defined earlier on the previous slide, in the case of an internet communication link, the adversary can be assumed to be able to read the information that is exchanged over this link. So without having additional security mechanisms such as encryption, the current design of the system would not be secure. And this you can actually again check mechanically using the tool which is associated with the system. So another security requirement which can be included using a stereotype is that of secure dependency. So this is again a static requirement on your structure of your system. And now you can use this kind of stereotype to make sure that the security requirements on the data in different parts of your system are mutually consistent. meaning that if you have, for example, the requirement secrecy on some data at one part of the system, if there is a call or send dependency between this part of the system and some other part of the system, then the same data in this other part of the system should also be required to fulfill the same kind of security requirement. And moreover, the dependency along which the information is communicated should also carry the same security requirement stereotype in order to be then able to use the earlier security requirement secure links to make sure that this is actually preserved by the physical security level. Again, an example to explain the stereotype. So here, continuing with our earlier example of this internet-based e-commerce application, we previously found out that the architecture where you have this internet connection without encryption was not considered to be secure. So now we decided to make use of encryption to secure the communication between the client and the business over the internet. And for this, one of the parts used in such an encryption mechanism is that you need to generate encryption keys. And this is what we see in this example of the specification of a key generator. And the point here is that to generate keys, you need random numbers. And to make the key generation secure and to keep the key secret, also these random numbers have to be secret. And to make sure that this is actually the case, you can use this secure dependency stereotype to ensure that the requirement in the part of the key generator component, which requires this random number operation to satisfy secrecy, that the same requirement should actually be included at the random generator which provides the random operation. And as you can again mechanically check from your given UML model, and you can also in this example see easily just by looking at the model, this security requirement is not provided at the other component, the random generator. And moreover, the call dependency between the key generator and the random generator also does not provide the secrecy requirement. And so this is again an example where this the security requirement is not fulfilled by the system. But again, as in the previous example, this could be easily fixed by including the secrecy requirement also at the random generator and by adding the secrecy requirement on the dependency. So these two previous stereotypes for security requirements could then be used to make sure that the security requirements are consistent without your system. And now we have a stereotype for a security requirement which focuses on a specific component of your system and which makes sure that the behavior which is modeled for this component again satisfies a certain security requirement. And this the example given here is that of a secure information flow requirement. And intuitively, the idea here is that there should not be possible that any partial information about secure data in your system is leaked out to unauthorized parties outside your system. And you can make this requirement more precise by associating a constraint with a stereotype. And for that, you firstly make use of the tag secrecy, which came up earlier, to specify the data whose secrecy should be preserved. And then on the technical level, the constraint, which is enforced by the UMLSec tool for the given secure information flow stereotype, is that any data which is specified to satisfy secrecy may also only influence other data which specifies secrecy. In this way, you prevent an indirect or partial information flow from secret data to non-secret data. So again, an example to explain this in more detail. This is the example, again continuing with our earlier example of a web-based e-commerce system. We now assume that the business part of the system has customer accounts for the various customers on the system. And these accounts, among other things, include an attribute called money, which takes care of the amount of money that has been so far spent by the customer at the business site. And now the requirement is that this money amount should be kept secret from outside parties, because it may be a privacy issue involved with the transactions taken out with the business. And also, of course, then you would also require the RM, or read money operation, which can be used to read the money balance, that this should also be kept secret. And similarly, for the write money operation, should also be kept secret. Now, the point is that within the system, there are two kinds of customers. Either the ones that do not receive an extra service, and these are the ones that have so far not spent more than 1,000 in some currency for buying goods over this website. And there is a second kind of customer which does receive the extra service because of having spent more than this amount. And we also assume that there is some way for other parties to get known the fact whether a given customer has extra service or not. So it could be the case that when one logs in with one's name, then there may be two kinds of access websites, and one only appears for the customer which has this extra service. So this means that there is this other operation called Rx, which you can use to query whether a given customer has this extra service or not. And the point is that in the circumstances which I just explained, it would not be the case that this Rx operation could be kept secret from unauthorized parties. And in this situation, you can then again make use of the UMLSec tool to find out that the security requirement of secure information flow, which is associated with the stereotype, is actually again violated by this design, because partial information on the amount of money spent so far by the customer, namely whether this is more or less than 1,000, is actually leaked out to unauthorized parties. And again, you can then make use of this information to use established security engineering patterns, such as a wrapper to fix the problem that was pointed out by this tool at this point. So here we see another kind of security requirement, again on the behavior of the system. And this is now a stereotype which is supposed to ensure that the interaction between different system components happens in a secure way. And this means that firstly, the secrecy of data which is labeled using the secrecy tag should be preserved, and similarly this should be the case for integrity requirements. And again, these informal requirements are made more precise within the context of the UML tool, in which they can again be checked mechanically. So now another example which makes use of this data security requirement. Here we consider a system where again, to continue our earlier example, we have two components, namely the customer and the business, which again should communicate over the internet. And the point here is simply that we make use of encryption to secure the communication link, which, as mentioned earlier, is over the internet is at the first instance insecure. And so here we use an internet protocol called, well, it's actually a variant of the security protocol TLS, which is the current successor to the SSL protocol. And so now we have a secret S, which should be exchanged by using the security protocol. And so we include the secrecy requirement in the specification. And now the point is that when using this custom-built variant of TLS, which was proposed at this conference Infocom, you can, or for example, in the situation where you would like to, or where you are forced to design a security protocol yourself because of specific requirements by your system, which cannot be met by a standard protocol, then you can now use UML to specify the protocol using a sequence diagram and to include the security requirement, and then again use the UML fact tool to make sure that this protocol is actually designed correctly and that the information which is exchanged actually remains secret. And now in this example on the slide, which I cannot explain in too much detail here, again, this was an example proposed at the conference, and when we used our approach to analyze this protocol, it actually turned out that the secrecy requirement which the protocol was supposed to fulfill was not provided by the protocol because it contains a flaw. And this again can be pointed out automatically by the tool associated with the UML fact approach. And again, you can then make use of standard security engineering knowledge to fix the problem and to correct the protocol. So, yeah, now another kind of stereotype included in the UML fact profile. This is now an example for a stereotype which applies to a specific application domain, namely that of Java-based systems, where you may like to make use of the Java security architecture mechanisms, which in the newest version include rather sophisticated mechanisms, such as being able to use guarded, signed or encrypted objects, of these different mechanisms. For example, the guarded objects are also supported by this approach, insofar as you can mark using the stereotype guarded, you can mark the classes in your system design which are supposed to be guarded by the Java security architecture, and then you can use the tag guard to specify which are the guard objects that are supposed to guard the access to these guarded classes. And again, within the UMLSec tool, you then have constraints that can be checked mechanically. Namely, firstly, that the references to these guarded objects are not leaked out except through the access control mechanisms. And secondly, you can check that the guarded class actually has an associated guard object, which you can also check that the guards or the conditions enforced by this guard are consistent with the overall security policy on your system. And here again, an example to see how this could look like. So here you will have a class which is supposed to be guarded. This is the MIG-SAI class on the left side of the diagram. And you have the constraint guarded access on your subsystem. And this, as I said earlier, is supposed to enforce that there's an associated guard called MIG-guard in this case, which should be control the access to the guarded class MIG-SAI. And then you can, as I said earlier, check that the constraints which are enforced by the state chart and which can also refer to the execution context of your system, that these checks actually are consistent with the overall security policy. So these are the stereotypes which I wanted to explain in this talk. I should emphasize that these are only some of the stereotypes offered by the UMLSec approach. Because of time constraints, I could not explain all of them, but these are representative for the other stereotypes. Now, just to give an overview on what, in general, the UMLSec approach provides. So firstly, we have seen that there are standard main security requirements which you can include within your UML models, such as secrecy, integrity, and so on, and which you can use to check whether these requirements are actually fulfilled on your system design. Then, secondly, there are threat scenarios which are actually included on the underlying level of the UMLSec tool, and which are included automatically when you make use of physical security stereotypes such as internet, local area network, and so on. And these threat scenarios are then used to automatically check whether your system is secure against these threat scenarios arising from the physical layer of your system. Then you can make use of specific security concepts, again by using the associated stereotypes such as smart card, which enforces or which models within your UML model that the component under consideration has certain security properties which are supposed to be associated, such as in the example of smart cards, to be tamper resistant. And furthermore, you can make use of stereotypes such as guarded access to model specific security mechanisms which you would like to use within your security-critical system that you are going to build. Then there are certain primitives which occur frequently within security-critical systems and which are also built in the humanistic approach, and this includes, for example, the use of encryption, which you can, where you can make use of HumanSec to model in which way your system uses encryption, and to make sure that this is done in a secure way. Because in practice, the systems are usually attacked by attacking the ways that security mechanisms such as encryption are used within this security context, rather than attacking the mechanism itself. And so using HumanSec, you can make sure automatically that the mechanisms are used correctly. Then you can also consider the level of physical security on your system by making use of stereotypes such as internet, encryption, and so on within your deployment diagrams. Then we've also seen an example as to how you can model security management using activity diagrams. So in the early example, we looked at the system of an electronic business process which was supposed to satisfy fair exchange requirement. And then lastly, you can also use HumanSec to consider technology-specific security aspects, such as we saw specific Java security mechanisms, or similarly, you can use similar stereotypes to model corporate security aspects. So now I will say a little bit about how the tool associated with the HumanSec approach does the security analysis, which I mentioned earlier. So firstly, the tool models different classes of adversaries, such as, for example, the default adversary or the internet, the insider adversary. And these, as mentioned already, using these threat sets, can then attack the system on the model level in certain ways. And you can actually simulate your system model together with these attacker models to find out whether on the design level your system is secure against these kinds of attackers. Then, now a bit more about how the tool associated with HumanSec achieves the goal of performing these security analyses mechanically. Firstly, we have to note that the meanings of the UML diagrams in the official UML document are stated only in English words, and at some points also contain ambiguities. And this is a problem if you want to provide your tool support, such as provided for HumanSec, and specifically if you want to check properties which refer to behavioral aspects of your system, which is often the case for security requirements. So in order to provide the HumanSec tool, we were just thus we had to provide a precise semantics for the used part of UML, which can then be used in the tool, which automatically checks the constraints associated with the stereotype that model security requirements. So now a bit about how the HumanSec tool is realized on a technological level. So firstly, the idea is that you should be able to make use of any commercial modeling tool to draw your UML models as you would do otherwise. But now the situation is that these tools, such as Rational Rows and so on, usually only allow you to perform certain syntactic checks and maybe to do code generation. But again, in the case of developing security critical systems, you would like to be able to perform analysis which go beyond these simple checks. And therefore, we provided this UMLSec tool, which allows you to perform these analysis mechanically. And so now, well, in order to provide this kind of tool, there are certain possibilities. Either you could use a general purpose language with an integrated XML parser, where you can make use of the fact that many UML case tools allow you to output the information about the UML models, which you modeled using the tool, using a specific XML dialect called XMI. And this way you can analyze the models making use of XML tools. And so these could secondly not just be general purpose language mechanisms, but you could also use special purpose XML languages. But there's a third approach which we actually use to create our tool associated with UMLSec, and this is the so-called data binding, where you can make use of frameworks to include the information which was output by the UML case tool as XML data in the tool that you're trying to build, for example, in this case, the UMLSec tool, by making use of a Java framework which allows you to access the information through Java methods. And more specifically, the tool that we used for designing the UMLSec tool is called MDR, for metadata repository. And this you can use to extract the data from the XMI file into Java objects, and then access this data through Java methods. In this way, one doesn't have to worry about parsing XML directly oneself. And so the tool associated with the UMLSec approach is then includes an industrial computer-aided software engineering tool which has been used for a number of years in industrial projects called AutoFocus. And this tool provides you with various functionalities. Firstly, you can verify your model, and now using the UMLSec tool, you can also actually use the UML models which you constructed in your favorite UML tool. And using the UMLSec tool, this is then connected to the AutoFocus verification engine, which allows you to verify the UML model for security requirements. And furthermore, it allows you to generate code from your UML model, which you can then make use of in your system to make sure that on the transition from model to code, there are no security flaws arising in that transition. And a third thing you can do using this tool is to generate test sequences from your UML model in a situation where you don't want to generate code directly from the UML model, but you still want to write the code manually. You can then use generated test sequences to make sure that the code actually satisfies the requirements by your UML model and that it does not include any security flaws which you may not have been able to detect on the design level. And so this way the overall human effect approach gives you a way of an overall approach to security, which allows you to consider security aspects throughout the whole system development, and also with respect to all the different views on your system, both the physical security layer up to the logical layer, and also including on the one hand the models, but also extending the approach to the actual code in your system. So now there are some case studies performed with the human effects approach. For example, we used the approach to analyze the common electronic product specifications, which is a global standard for electronic purses, which is being developed by companies including Visa International. And we used the human effect approach to model these specifications and also to point out some improvements with respect to security, where we had found inconsistencies within the common electronic purse specification documents. Then, secondly, the human effect approach was used in a project with a major German bank, where we analyzed a multi-layer security protocol, which was custom-built within their system and relying on an internet SSL protocol connection, but adding additional functionality on top of that. And so we used the human effect approach to make sure that this custom-built security protocol actually fulfills the requirements, security requirements. And another example where the human effect approach was used was in the business software called SAP. In that context, where the software was supposed to regulate access control, again in the setting of a major German bank, and we used the human effect approach to make sure that these access control configurations actually do enforce the overall security policy within that company. So in this you can again also, using the human effect tool, check automatically. And furthermore, human effects is used in a project concerning risk analysis for critical business processes in the context of new international standards for business processes within the banking sector, which are going to be enforced in a few years and which add a higher level of security on the business processes that have to be enforced by the systems in that application domain. And there are many other applications of the UMS tech approach already, which unfortunately I don't have the time to explain in detail here. So now coming to the end of this presentation, I would just like to point out some more resources if you would like to learn some more about the approach. So firstly, there's a book coming out later this year with Springer Verlag, which explains this approach in more detail. Then secondly, there's a continuing series of tutorials where the approach is explained in more detail at a series of international conferences. And the next instance of that tutorial will be next month in a conference in Mexico. And there's already another instance planned at a conference in Pisa in a few months. And more information about both the book and also the tutorials and other information about the UMS approach can be found on this URL. So finally, I would just like to mention that within our research group at Munich University of Technology, we are always interested in implying the methods that we develop, including the human sec approach, to actual challenges arising from industrial contexts, to use them to solve actual practical problems arising in practice. So if you are interested in some kind of development or application project, including any of the ideas that I explained today, or that you may find on our websites, you can just also contact me either today or via the internet. And so much for the presentation, and thank you very much for your interest in the presentation. And if you have any questions, I would be happy to answer them, either now or later via the internet. Thank you. So are there any questions right now? Okay, thank you very much for the question. So, I suppose the question referred to the situation where in your system you would like to change the security requirements throughout employing the system. For example, you may have a security policy including secrecy and integrity, which changes throughout the system deployment. And so you can use this approach to actually model the fact that there should be a dynamic change in security requirements throughout the deployment of the system. So you could, for example, model the business processes involved in your system using activity diagrams, and then include the changing security requirements within that activity diagram. So in that sense, you can model dynamically changing security policies. So I hope this addresses the question.
それをいくつかのレベルに分けてやってるとかいうのがよくあるんですけども、
Okay, yeah, thank you. Yeah, so firstly, the concern that it is often quite expensive to develop highly secure systems is actually one of the motivations to define the human extension, because this allows you to make use of standard security engineering knowledge to build your systems. And then it is in fact true that sometimes you would like to have lower levels of security within a specific security context, because the assets that should be secured do not justify high costs in providing a certain level of security. And for that, the HumanSec approach allows you, firstly, to model different kinds of adversary models, and in this way to model the fact that different kinds of system assets may have different associated attackers that may be interested in obtaining the specific information. So if you have some information which is of a lower level of security, you could, for example, make use of a different adversary model, which makes use of the fact that the adversaries interested in that information have a reduced level of power in attacking the system, or maybe a reduced level of motivation. And this then allows you to make use also within your system model of a lower level of security, and to make sure, using the HumanSec approach, that this intermediate level of security is again consistent with the not so strong adversary model, which is the specific consideration. So in that respect, you have quite a high level of flexibility using HumanSec to model the fact that different parts of the system may be required to satisfy different levels of security, because, as you mentioned, this involves different costs in devising the different parts of the system. Okay, thank you.